The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
We'll be interviewing Ron DeSantis, and he has quite an announcement to make. And it'll be the first time that something like this is happening on social media and with real-time questions and answers. Not scripted.
All right, big fanfare here now. This is a Fox News alert, and Fox News has confirmed that Florida Governor Ron DeSantis will announce his candidacy for president tomorrow. We hear that the announcement is going to take place 6 p.m. tomorrow night in a Twitter space conversation that Ron DeSantis will have with Elon Musk. Wow. It doesn't get much bigger than that.
That's one way to do it.
Yeah.
We've already seen the former president, Donald Trump, spend more money on Ron DeSantis through his PAC and ads than they spent on supporting candidates in the midterms of 2022. That's a pretty staggering fact.
One of the sources that we've been speaking with told us that in the conversations between Musk and the campaign, he made it clear that he believes that former President Trump cannot win again. He believes that DeSantis can. He believes that DeSantis is the future. And
one, Donald Trump can only serve one term. He'll effectively be a lame duck almost on day one if he were to win. But I don't think he can win the general. That's the number two reason. I don't think he can win the general. It's time to move on to the next generation. And Governor DeSantis is a vision forward versus hashing out things from the past. And I suspect that Donald Trump has peaked in the polls. So that we want to unite the country. And we can't have name calling. We've got to move to, you know, an adult conversation on real issues. And I think I think Donald Trump should drop out of the race, quite frankly, for the better of the country. I think he should drop out of the race.
There's one of the DeSantis donors, a billionaire, I believe, calling on Donald Trump to drop out. Yet another montage of Trump is finished. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. We certainly appreciate you joining us on today's program. You can get to the live video stream of this show at trumpetdaily.com, or you can go over to our Rumble channel, which is adding quite a few subscribers every single day. That's the Trumpet Daily over at Rumble. So, as you heard there, they're excited. DeSantis has the big announcement tonight. I think he's Elon Musk's pick as well. So lots of power, lots of interest groups, lots of billionaire donors getting behind Ron DeSantis. And of course, saying that Donald Trump is unelectable. He's actually won an election. He shocked the world in 2016. He had the 2020 election stolen from him. And yet look at all of these people just ignoring the elephant in the room. I mean, okay, leave aside the fact that you don't believe there were, you know, mules stuffing the ballot boxes or that there were any glitches in the machines. What about the cover-up of Hunter's laptop? What about the big tech and social media sites that basically blotted out Donald Trump? Totally one-sided in favor of Joe Obama, the deep state, all of the Washington insiders, the media, and they act like people don't like Donald Trump. It really is amazing to watch this. The Wall Street Journal, it says, here's one that's not so sure about whether or not Donald Trump is, as they say, unelectable. It says here, as the Republican primary contest gets going in earnest, we are going to hear a lot about electability. That's what we'll be hearing a lot about in the coming months. Mr. DeSantis put it most directly last week. Well, it quotes him as saying, look, I have the best shot against Biden. Trump can't beat Biden. The polls, of course, suggest otherwise. It says, persuading people to vote for you on the grounds that you're more acceptable to a wider electorate is a tricky proposition. Gets into some of the history with previous elections. It says Mr. Trump himself was deemed by almost everyone less electable than Marco Rubio or Jeb Bush in 2016. I saw a clip just this morning of one of the debates where Donald Trump just basically destroyed Jeb Bush. And yet all the talking heads were saying, you know, Jeb Bush is the one. Jeb Bush is more electable against Hillary Clinton. Well, how does that advice look today? This says here, another problem with the argument is that it isn't at all obvious in any case that Mr. Trump is less electable than DeSantis, Mr. Scott, or Pence. It says, true, he lost in 2020. Again, they're ignoring the elephant in the room. He also failed to win a plurality of the popular vote in 2016 and arguably cost the Republicans dearly in both the 2018 and 2022 midterm elections. It says here, but most of these were very close elections. Now listen to this. In 2020, a few tens of thousands of votes in three states would have made him 2-for-2 in presidential contests. Again, what they're not mentioning is how that it was rigged. Rigged by the media. Rigged by the deep state. Rigged by the FBI. Rigged by the machines. Rigged by the ballot harvesting. Rigged by the mail-in ballots. Rigged by COVID. And on it goes. The Carrie Lake case, by the way, there's a piece here in the Associated Press, her losing in court on Monday, I think it was announced. Her lawsuit had another loss after a judge rejected her last remaining claim on Monday after a 3-day trial. Thompson ruled the court didn't find clear and convincing evidence that Maricopa County election officials failed to correctly verify signatures. He didn't see clear evidence. As you recall, we played it for you on Monday's show. There's video evidence of some guy just hitting the button time, not verifying or checking anything. And the lawyer said, look, it takes a few seconds for the ballot to come up, and then you've got to compare it to what's on file. And these guys that were just racing through the process clearly were not verifying. That violates state law. This is how lawless we are. Here's the Associated Press. Here's a judge basically saying, don't believe what you see on the video. Just believe what we tell you happened. Everything was perfect. Everything was just right. Listen to this. It says the former TV news anchor's team also showed video footage from a Maricopa County camera feed that allegedly shows a signature verified incorrectly and hastily by a worker. That's exactly what you see. You see it with your eyes if you watch the footage. But of course, most people don't. The news doesn't cover the story. They only cover it when Carrie Lake loses. So they talk about, yes, it's another loss. Another loss for Carrie Lake. Another loss for Donald Trump. He lost in the midterms. It was supposed to be a red wave, remember? So Donald Trump is the one that's unelectable. That's the narrative. And they're sticking with it. It doesn't matter. DeSantis has been campaigning, even though he hasn't announced it officially, he's been campaigning for months. And the more he campaigns, the lower his approval rating goes. The farther Donald Trump pulls ahead. That's the truth of it. It says here at the Associated Press, this is at that Carrie Lake suit, the current polling doesn't even support, actually this is back to the unelectability article, the Wall Street Journal. It says the current polling doesn't even support the contention that Mr. Trump is unelectable. It says the latest Real Clear average puts him narrowly ahead of Mr. Biden in nationwide polls, while it has DeSantis and Biden in a tie. And when there's other polls that have DeSantis losing to Biden and Trump winning. Pretty amazing. Why are they working so hard from so many different angles to destroy Donald Trump, to indict Donald Trump, to put Donald Trump in prison if he's so easily beatable at the polls? If they could destroy him in an election, what are they concerned about on the communist left side, I mean? This is from the New York Times. It says federal prosecutors overseeing the investigation into former President Trump's handling of classified documents have issued a subpoena for information about Mr. Trump's business dealings in foreign countries since he took office. I mean, how rich is this? Jack Smith is going after Trump on business dealings with foreign countries. Hello? Hello, have you heard anything about the Biden crime family? And all of the dealings that Joe Biden, Jim Biden, Hunter Biden had with our adversaries like China and Russia? He had dealings in Ukraine, Romania, all of these foreign dealings and these prostitution rings. Who knows how many spies Hunter Biden slept with? We know Swalwell slept with one. That goes on routinely on the communist side. And they get away with it. And there's no investigations. Or if there are investigations, it just goes on and on and on for years. Where's the indictment for Hunter Biden? All of these crimes caught on camera. It's right there on the laptop. Bill Barr had the goods, didn't do anything with it. But Trump, I mean, they're widening the investigation. He's moved boxes around. We don't know if that's legal or not. Now they're going after him for business dealings overseas. Really? Says here, it remains unclear precisely what the prosecutors were hoping to find by sending the subpoena to Trump's company, the Trump Organization, or when it was issued. But the subpoena suggests that investigators have cast a wider net. Surprise, surprise. They've cast a wider net than previously understood as they scrutinize whether he broke the law in taking sensitive government materials with him upon leaving the White House and then not fully complying with the demands for their return. Have they made demands for Biden to return his classified documents yet? Or Pence? Or any of the others? Obama? Obama took millions of files. It says here, the subpoena drafted by the Office of the Special Counsel sought details of the Trump Organization's real estate licensing and development dealings in seven countries. Lists all the countries, as I say. This is especially rich. Joe Biden and his crime family doing all of these deals. We know of at least $10 million that the Biden family, nine of them, got in wire transfers from foreign nations. The House has revealed this just in the last few weeks. Getting paid wire transfers from China, from CCP-backed companies in China. Doing all these deals with dictators. And of course, they're looking for Trump. They're looking at Trump's business dealings, if you can believe it. There's another, this is from The Guardian. It says federal prosecutors have evidence Donald Trump was put on notice that he could not retain any classified documents after he was subpoenaed for their return last year. The big story here, Trump was put on notice. Trump was warned, you're going to have to return those documents. They strain at gnats to try to get anything on this man. Because he's so easily beatable in an election, it's just the opposite. It's shaping up to be Trump is unbeatable. That's the actual narrative. And so they want to get him on these things. There's another piece here about Jack Smith supposedly wrapping up his investigation. So it's hard to say. That's the Wall Street Journal. But the New York Times, as I just read to you, says that he's actually widening the investigation. The trial date, by the way, for that Manhattan court date, that's set for March of 2024. So the persecution is to continue right on through the election cycle. They fired Tucker in the hope that he wouldn't be able to say anything until after the election. So they're setting it up again to try to rig it, to try to steal it. And, of course, this is the storyline that everybody ignores, that nobody talks about. This is from Kim Strassel. Oh, it's a great article about the Durham report and all of the lawless criminal behavior going on in the deep state. The only problem with it is there's no mention of the dear leader. There's no mention of Barack Hussein Obama. Now, there's a few that are started, as I've covered over the last week, there's a few voices out there that are pointing at Obama as the head of this spying and persecution operation against Trump. He was the one, remember, that was over the DOJ, that was over the FBI when Crossfire Hurricane started, when the dirty dossier was circulating around Washington, D.C., when they were applying for the FISA applications. Play this from, Dan Bongino, the talk show host, clip 2.
Folks, Obama knew. That came out this weekend. Fox is reporting it. A number of other outlets are reporting that now it's crystal clear that Barack Obama and Joe Biden both knew in August of 2016 at the latest that Hillary Clinton was planning to make up a story about Russian collusion to switch blame from her and the email scandal onto Trump. Why is this significant? Because, folks, I'm going to play this cut coming up here of Devin Nunes on Maria Bartiromo this weekend, who knows, he knows everything. I'm going to play this cut, and I'm going to tell you something I need you to digest right now and tattoo on your brain. This scandal is not about Hillary Clinton, folks. They are not protecting Hillary Clinton by trying to make this thing go away. They are protecting Obama.
This is why they won't talk about the Durham report. Or when they did last week, they said there's nothing there. There's no new additional information. There certainly is. The new information, the most damning information in that report, is that Obama knew. He knew that the Clinton people were cooking it up. They were making it up, the Russia collusion hoax. And then Obama unleashed the deep state on Donald Trump. Richard Palmer this morning in the morning brief, he says here, did Donald Trump collude with Russia? Repeated investigations proved the answer. No. Finally, according to this poll he cites, a majority of Americans know this. 56% said they believed the Steele dossier and the Trump-Russia collusion was fake news. So that's heartening, I guess, 56%. But like Richard points out, what's going on with the 44%? The people that actually think he did, and still, like Nunes said on Bartiromo's show Sunday, there still are lunatics who believe that Trump colluded with Russia. He says here, for Democrats, to me, the most surprising part, though, is that 44% said it was true. He says, for Democrats, that rises to 70%. Half of those surveyed said they'd never heard of the Durham report. They never even heard of it. Why? Well, because Morning Joe won't talk about it. CNN, MSNBC, they blot it out. When it doesn't fit within their narrative, they just simply ignore it. And then they accuse Fox News or whoever does talk about it of spreading propaganda. Durham's report, I mean, this was an official investigation by a man that both sides saw as upstanding and unbiased. BT, though, before Trump. Once Trump comes along, you see the derangement sets in on any given topic. It doesn't matter what it is. So Durham comes out. It's 306 pages. It says Obama knew. He knew it was a lie, and yet he ran with it. The dear leader. That's right. The prophesied Antiochus says here, the media are still succeeding at keeping millions of Americans in the dark. And Richard says it really is a deadly danger. He's paraphrasing something my father has said over the years, a deadly danger for a media, a regime media, to be this corrupt, this much in the tank for all things Obama. Obama's role in Spygate or Trump-Russia collusion, it's virtually ignored. There's a few exceptions, like you heard just there from Dan Bongino. But coming back to this Strassel article, she says the Federal Bureau of Investigation received some shocking intelligence in 2018 suggesting the Russians might have compromised Christopher Steele's sources. So all along the way, they were compiling not evidence that Trump was guilty, They were compiling evidence, exculpatory evidence, that proved Trump was innocent and that Steele and Clinton and Obama were all lying. It says here, according to Special Counsel Durham's report, the team reviewing the intelligence was told in a meeting with a top member of the Trump-Russia collusion probe to be careful because, quote, issues relating to Steele were under intense scrutiny. Now, be careful with this. That these sources are somehow compromised. We're looking into this. I mean, this was run from right at the very top of the FBI and above that. You had Comey, and then you had Obama above him. And just like Peter Strzok texted, Obama wants to know everything about this case. He's running it. This is so scandalous that a president a now ex-president, really the de facto president, because Biden's a puppet, that he's persecuting his opponents, taking his agencies of investigation, of spying, and turning them on the opposition here at home. It says here, Dina Corsi, the deputy assistant director for counterintelligence, then ordered that findings be reported only orally. One FBI lawyer told the Durham team it was the most inappropriate operational or professional statement he'd ever heard at the FBI, and that he was so appalled he walked off the review. The lawyer didn't know exactly who'd given the order, but said Ms. Corsi was speaking for FBI leadership. They all said, hey, no more emails, no more communications that can be tracked. We've got to deal with this investigation orally. They had no evidence, said Durham, no evidence to even justify starting Crossfire Hurricane. They not only started it, they kept it going through four FISA warrants. Lying to the courts. It's a really great article, as I say, covering a lot of detail, summarizing a lot of the most damning detail in the Durham report. The only problem being that Obama's not mentioned. And Kim Strassel, I'm sure, you know, she's mentioned Obama in other pieces, I suppose. But you see how Obama always skates free. Well, he doesn't in this book. America Under Attack. He's the one behind the attack. He's leading the attack. He's the point of the spear, Obama. I mean, the book starts, as I told you yesterday, the swooning media. They swoon before the dear leader. And then chapter one, Barack Obama, fundamentally transforming America. And then the second chapter, law coming under attack. He's behind this lawless attack. Play another clip from Bongino the other day, clip three.
This is a scandal about Obama. Yeah, it's about Hillary Clinton and her personal email. But it's really about Obama. Obama's their golden calf, man. They worship this guy. They don't really care about Hillary. She ain't going to run again. I'll be honest with you, they don't care about Joe Biden either. They need Joe Biden out so they can get Buttigieg or someone else to run. Remember, it's always about protecting liberalism, not a person. They're going to try to get Michelle Obama in this race. They can't have Barack Obama being dirtied up at all with this scandal.
It's all about Obama. He's right. That's who they're trying to protect. That's why they've blotted out this story. They've blotted out the Durham report. As Richard covered in his Trumpet brief, there's a lot of people on the Democrat side that don't even know Durham released a report. They're that in the dark. They just don't even know what's happened. So you see how powerful the regime media is, or can be, by controlling the narrative, by spreading the propaganda, the lies. And if no one's there to expose it, this is why Obama can't sleep at night when he thinks about Fox News and alternative media sources that do expose these lies. They want to crush all dissent. That's why it was rigged by big tech, by the regime media, the election, I mean, in 2020. It says here, all this was then centralized in FBI quarters. This is Strassel's piece. Line agents early on wanted to interview Mr. Page, a step agents said made only too much sense, and the Durham report says would likely have put the whole issue to rest. If Page is a spy, or if he's compromised, well, let's interview him and we can put this to rest. But the higher-ups, you see, at the FBI and beyond, said, now, hold on a second. We've got to keep the spying going. We've got to keep this investigation going. It says here they were prohibited by Comey and McCabe, who remained fixated on getting a secret surveillance warrant on Mr. Page. They were fixated on this. We've got to keep spying. These are criminals. This is like members of the mafia. And of course, Obama presiding over it. He's the mafia boss. He's the Don. They were prohibited by Comey and McCabe, who were fixated on getting the warrant. It says the attorney prepping that application recalled being constantly pressured by management to push it through, being told that Mr. Comey wants to know what's going on, while Mr. McCabe exhorted to get this going. We've got to keep it going. We've got to keep moving forward on this. Strassel says here finally, the Durham report is littered with agents recalling their frustration that they were excluded from the flow of information and decision-making process and steamrolled when they objected to unjustified inquiries. It says one agent was told in 2017 that his primary job was renewing the Page surveillance application, yet his team didn't believe Mr. Page to be a threat and thought the investigation a dry hole. When he told his superior, he was ignored and directed to continue. It was a hit job from the beginning. This is how they rigged it in 2020, this spirit of Antiochus. It's really astonishing to think about how much Donald Trump was able to accomplish in his four-year presidency, going against all of this, constantly having to defend himself against these lies, against this onslaught, against Barack Obama's attack. Listen to one more clip from Bongino, number four.
This is a scandal about Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton's email because he not only knew, but he must have approved it. And the deep staters will do anything to stop you from knowing this fact. And the fact that I have not seen one single person pick up on this story is just stunning and puzzling to me. Because it's right in front of your face. It doesn't require any leaps of knowledge, any vast conspiracy theories, anything. It's right there. We now know, according to the Durham report, Obama and Joe Biden knew in 2016 during the campaign, Hillary was trying to distract with the collusion scandal from her email scandal. We also know Obama had a BlackBerry. We know Hillary had a private email. We know she emailed Obama. How the hell did the emails get to the BlackBerry? Oh, they had to be whitelisted. None of this requires a spectacular leap in logic.
You just have to go after the evidence. You have to look at it. Think about, I mean, that's a good point about Barack Obama's BlackBerry. He fought for that. And coming in 2009, he was the first president to email during his presidency. George Bush, when he came in, he stopped emailing altogether. Just for a matter of national security, even. Obama comes in, he insists on having the BlackBerry. He allows Hillary Clinton to have the server in her basement. He lets Hunter Biden travel the world, securing millions of dollars in deals with communist countries, with dictatorships. This all happened under Obama's watch. How much evidence does the deep state have, not just on the Biden crime family, not just on the Clinton Foundation, but on Barack Hussein Obama? And yet, why won't they go after him? Because, whether it's the deep state or the media, it's because they swoon. They swoon. As I say, that's in the opening pages of America Under Attack. It says here in his book, The Sublime and Terrifying Inside Story of Obama's Final Campaign, author Michael Hastings described the captivating effect Barack Obama had on the journalists covering him during his second presidential campaign. Hastings told MSNBC's Martin Bashir, that's the presence of Obama. The presence of Obama, even on the press corps, even on the people who follow him every day. When they're near him, they lose their minds sometimes. They've lost their minds. They start behaving in ways that are juvenile and amateurish, and they swoon, he says. I gave you that quote, I know, on Monday. And we played the clip from CBS last week. The gal who said, you are never to question Obama's character, his integrity, or his intellect. You just simply can't question it. Now, what does that say about the lack of truth and objectivity when it comes to reporting? When you're on this side saying he should never be questioned, and then with Trump over here, you got to question every little thing, every jot and tittle. Everything needs to be examined and scrutinized. And so no wonder, as I said yesterday, you have people coming to our PAC saying, yeah, I'm thankful for the Trumpet Daily because I feel like that with everything else, you're just getting fake news. Yet another thing that Donald Trump was right about. They're fake. He'd go to his rallies, he'd point to all of the news people, and he'd say, the fake news media. He also said, if they're going to come after me like this, think about what they could do to you an ordinary American without the resources that Donald Trump has to defend himself. This is from NBC. It says, FBI officials repeatedly violated their own standards when they searched a vast repository of foreign intelligence for information related to the January 6, 2021 insurrection at the U.S. Capitol and racial justice protests in 2020. Of course, most of it was about Jan 6, as we know. According to a heavily blacked out court order released Friday, it says FBI officials said the thousands of violations, which also include improper searches of donors to a congressional campaign, predated a series of corrective measures that started in the summer of 2021. They were self-correcting. Okay, we got a little messy here and there, but we've made some reforms. And that was their response in large part to the Durham report. Look, okay, there were mistakes with Crossfire Hurricane, but all that's been corrected. That's what they say. To leave the agency to itself, and that's basically what's happened with Horowitz and now Durham. Nothing came of it. There are reports, but they basically exposed criminal behavior, but then nobody's held to account. Even as they try to go after Trump, as I said earlier, for his business dealings. Oh, okay, that's how it works. People don't trust the FBI and the DOJ at all. Those that know what's going on. Of course, there's the other half that don't even know the Durham report came out. They're quite happy to see the FBI violating its own rules to go after, to spy on January 6 protesters so that you can put them in jail. To use these agencies, these powerful agencies, to track, to use phone technology. You can do that, you see, when you're going after Jan 6. You can look at all the phone data for Jan 6, but with respect to the mules, and what Dinesh D'Souza brought out in his documentary last year, that's not to be relied upon. That's unreliable, that sort of technology. So the FBI just turns a blind eye to the obvious corruption that was happening, not on January 6th. It was happening on November 3rd. It was happening when they stole the election from Donald Trump. This is NBC, by the way. FBI broke rules in scouring foreign intelligence on January 6th riot. So says the court. There's at least one honest judge that says, hey, listen, you guys, you're violating your own rules. This is lawless. You can't spy on Americans. That's what they're doing. I have one last piece here from Julie Kelly. Why is everyone protecting Ray Epps? It says here, now it appears Tucker Carlson was in fact prepared to address Epps' interview. This guy that's got the Tucker book coming out. I said to you yesterday, he has made comments that it was in fact part of the settlement with Dominion. I guess, again, it's verbal now. You can't put that in writing because then everyone will be able to see just how corrupt this is. Oh, yeah, we want our hundreds of millions and we want Tucker fired. They got all they wanted. Fox News wouldn't stand up to it. Well, we now know that his final monologue, the one that he was going to give that Monday night before he learned that he was fired, it was about Ray Epps. It was about the January 6 hoax. It says here, Chadwick Moore, author of the upcoming biography on Carlson, revealed in a video message posted on Twitter on Monday that Carlson's scheduled monologue that night dealt with, among other things, investigations around January 6 and particularly Ray Epps, the only person captured on video inciting people to violence at the Capitol that day and allegedly an FBI informant who still has not been arrested or charged. It says Carlson quote tweeted Moore's video with a wide-eyed emoji to confirm Moore's report. In other words, he's telling the truth. That's what he had planned for that night. Unfortunately, it never made it to the air because Fox fired him earlier in the day. And so covering up the truth and spewing out false narratives. I mean, this is what they do. This is what the deep state does. This is what the Uniparty does. This is what the regime media does. And, of course, I've gone through so many of them before, Isaiah 59 and others, talking about how the truth, Daniel 8 says it's cast to the ground. Truth fails. I mean, it really is a war on reality. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is The Trumpet Daily. If you'd like to email the show, you can reach us at td@thetrumpet.com. We'll be right back.
The Trumpet Daily.
I'm speaking to you from our television studios in Pasadena, where I speak to the world as a voice crying out in the wilderness of modern religious confusion.
Herbert W. Armstrong was the world's leading televangelist and one of the most prominent religious leaders of the 20th century. Watched, read, and followed by millions worldwide. But his legacy of Bible-based humanitarianism came under attack after he died. The cabal of leaders who took control of the church he founded, after pledging to follow in his footsteps, methodically destroyed all he had built. Those who would stop them were silenced or excommunicated. This shocking story of betrayal and deception is told in Raising the Ruins. To learn more, please visit thetrumpet.com.
The Trumpet Daily.
Back in 1988, I was just a tender little 18-year-old. My parents drove me across half the country to Pasadena, California, where they dropped me off at the Hall of Administration at Ambassador College there in Pasadena. And I checked in. I was an incoming freshman for the fall semester. So after checking in and saying goodbye to my parents, I then walked right across that beautiful campus with the Hall of Ad and then the Ambassador Auditorium, the dining hall, the football field beyond that, and the basketball gymnasium. All that was to my left. And then these glorious dorms and Armstrong Hall, I believe, up the hill, up the slope to my right. And then at the end, there was my my dormitory, or where I would be living for my freshman year. It was called Grove Terrace. This was an exciting time for me. I was really enthusiastic about my college career at AC. I was really excited about going to headquarters, going right to the heart of God's work at that time. And of course, at that time, what I didn't realize was that this was also the epicenter of a great Laodicean rebellion prophesied in your Bible in the end of Revelation 3, obviously 2 Thessalonians 2. As I say, this was August of 1988. Herbert Armstrong had died in January of 1986, so 2.5 years earlier. And by the time I set foot on campus for my freshman year, they had already pulled Mystery of the Ages from circulation. They had stopped distributing Mystery of the Ages, Herbert Armstrong's greatest ever work, the book that he wrote in the last year of his life. And these Laodicean ministers had set it aside. They discontinued it. They destroyed about 100,000 copies that remained in inventory. We learned this in the lawsuit that we had over Mystery of the Ages from 1997 to 2003. History. This is important history. A lot of it's recounted in Raising the Ruins. If you want to learn more about this story, this history, Malachi's Message would be a good place to start, my father's book, and then the one I added years later, Raising the Ruins, and of course, Mystery of the Ages. Get that, and as my father said in Malachi's Message, I mean, prove it for yourself. See if Mystery of the Ages is riddled with errors, as Joe DiCacci Jr. said infamously when he fired my father that December night in 1989. See for yourself. You can prove it. You can study it yourself. But if you think about that history and that crucial turning point or transformation that was happening in the Worldwide Church of God, I mean, that was back in the late 1980s. We've now been in the Laodicean era of God's church for 37 years. 37 years of Laodiceanism in the church, and really the spirit of Laodicea is in our nations as well. I mentioned in the first segment how many people don't even know that Durham released a report. They don't even know the essence of what the Durham report covers. They're in a, what you could say, they're in a Laodicean mindset. This is the seventh and final era of God's church. And God says about Laodicea, we'll read it in a moment. He says that they're lukewarm, they're rich, they're increased with goods. Let me just read to you what my father wrote in Malachi's message. As I say, request your free copy of this book so you can understand this history, this prophecy. It was certainly prophecy at the time. Boy, this book really did. It triggered the start of this work, God raising the ruins. It says here, in these two eras of Revelation 3, there are three phases discussed, talking about the last two eras of the church, Philadelphia, then Laodicea. It says, first, there was the Philadelphia church in the Philadelphia era. Herbert Armstrong was the leader. Second, there's the Laodicean church in the Laodicean era, which began when Herbert Armstrong died. That's January of 1986. And then third, it says, there's the Philadelphia church that comes out of the Laodicean church during the Laodicean era. So God's people had to come out of the Laodicean church. We had to leave that. You see that beautiful auditorium, that's Ambassador Auditorium in Pasadena, California. We had to leave that church, or in some cases, people were put out. They were disfellowshipped by Tkachism. Mr. Tkach is the one who took over the reins of government in the Worldwide Church of God and immediately started to disfellowship Herbert Armstrong post-mortem, kicking him right out of his own church, basically, destroying his literature, as I said, shutting down the work, run around the world. We're familiar with fundamental transformations. We saw it happen in spiritual Israel, and we're seeing it happen in physical Israel as well, in the United States, fundamentally transformed in just a few years. In the case of the Worldwide Church, of course, it's been, as I say, 37 years where we've been faithfully continuing to do God's work, and yet surrounded by Laodiceanism, that spirit of lukewarmness, of just being apathetic and not really having the courage to fight, you know, remaining neutral. My father wrote a coworker letter back in March where he mentioned this story recently, where our two colleagues in Jerusalem, heading up the office that we have, the operation that we have going on in Jerusalem, that they gave a tour on the Ophel site to a couple of former ministers of the Worldwide Church of God, Laodicean ministers. And they were really excited about seeing the Ophel. They were really happy to tell Brent and Chris that, you know, you guys are doing a great service to God. You're doing a good work. It's awesome to see these excavations continue. And yet, as my father said, Brent and Chris were also disappointed to just see how comfortable these two men were in their Laodicean mindset. It's just so easy. It's like the frog in the boiling pot, right? It's just so easy to stay in the water and to not really notice that the temperature is rising. It's so easy to get comfortable in a Laodicean mindset. My father says this in Malachi's message. We often talk about a Laodicean attitude. The truth is, many people are confused about what this is. The Laodiceans don't want to follow the Philadelphia standard. That's precisely what a Laodicean is. A person revolting against the Philadelphia understanding. It says that's because they want to be the standard. They are too often setting their own standard. A Laodicean is nothing more than a person who strives to get the focus off the Philadelphia attitude. That's what makes a person Laodicean. It says here, the Laodiceans have need of nothing. This means they have a horrible self-righteousness problem. They have deep spiritual problems, but they don't see them. That's because they're self-righteous. They think self is right. They think they're right. They think they're religious. They think they're obeying God. And yet they're Laodicean. And God says in Revelation 3 that he just wants to spew them out of his mouth. because they're not hot, they're not cold, they're just lukewarm in between. God hates that. He hates that condition. And we have to as well. That mindset, the Laodicean mindset, is what destroyed the worldwide Church of God. It's what destroyed God's work. And so, obviously, we've got to guard against it. We don't want that same mindset to destroy us or our families, certainly not God's work in this Laodicean era. You really do have to fight to uphold that Philadelphia standard. You really do have to have the courage to fight for God's truth in a world where we're just immersed in lies and deception, as I point out so often in the first segment of this show. The truth of it is, Laodiceanism is a sin. It's a sin that must be put away, that must be removed from our lives. And it's also a sin that's very easy to get into. Paul, in Hebrews 12, Paul talks about the sins that so easily beset us. It's just so easy to become lukewarm, spiritually. Notice Revelation 3. We'll read through this Laodicean section. In chapter 3 of Revelation, verse 14 says, "And unto the angel of the church of the Laodiceans write, These things saith the Amen, the faithful and true witness, the beginning of the creation of God." It says in verse 15, "I know your works, that you are neither cold nor hot." God says, "I would that you were cold or hot. I wish you were one or the other. I wish you had more passion. I wish you had that red hot, passionate devotion to God and God's truth." Verse 16 says, "So then because you are lukewarm and neither cold nor hot, I will spew you out of my mouth." I mean, this is New Testament here. This is Revelation 3. God says here, without zeal, without a fiery ambition for God, it's impossible, really, to serve God the way that we should. We need a red-hot zeal, just like it says in Isaiah 9 about God. That's the way God is. It says the zeal of the Eternal will perform this family vision that extends out into the universe that's just going to continue to grow and expand. How? By God's zeal. God is zealous. God has a fiery passion to fulfill His will, to carry out His plan of salvation for all of mankind. Verse 17 says, "Because you say," God says, look, I spew you out of my mouth. And then verse 17, "because you say, I am rich and increased with goods and have need of nothing, and know not that you are wretched and miserable and poor and blind and naked." See, they came in, they were spoiled, those Laodicean leaders, as they inherited hundreds of millions of dollars in income every year, and probably, if not hundreds of millions, tens of millions of dollars worth of property and goods and all kinds of tools and instruments that Herbert Armstrong used to do the work. The Laodiceans come along and they receive all of that, and they put their trust in riches, in physical things, instead of in God. Their faith, the devil destroyed their faith. They became materialistic. They became faithless. They stopped doing the work. They started covering up truth and spreading lies and deception. They started forming false narratives. I'll never forget when our lawyer pressed one of them about, he was going on and on in his deposition about just how horrible it was to be a member of the Worldwide Church of God. He was a member all these years, his adult life. And he said, it's like the church abused me. And our lawyer said to him, well, it is true that nobody chained you to one of the chairs in the auditorium, did they? I mean, you could have got up and walked out any time, couldn't you? And he quietly admitted, well, yeah, that's true. And then carried on about how that, well, he didn't because he was brainwashed. They come along, and they wait until Herbert Armstrong dies, by the way. And then they start revising the history. They start lying. Lying wonders, the Bible calls it. And Malachi's message, I mean, that was like a truth bomb. For those that would receive it and read it and prove it. But it's just like the Durham report. See, there were people for years and years and years that didn't even know Malachi's message was out there. Now, admittedly, the PCG started in 1989 with just 12 people, and the first version of Malachi's message was a little manuscript. So it took some time to publicize the message, to get the word out. But because all of those Laodicean ministers just blotted it out, they covered it up. They didn't address Malachi's message until they absolutely had to. And then when they did that, they lied. They lied about it. God says in verse 18 here, this is again the Laodicean section, I counsel you to buy of me gold tried in the fire, that you may be rich, and white raiment, that you may be clothed. You see, put on some righteous garments here, and you're going to be tried and tested, and receive it. Receive the correction, and turn it around, it says, and that the shame of your nakedness do not appear, and anoint your eyes with eye salve, that you may see. See this trial of fire, the great tribulation. I mean, in many ways, that's meant to motivate the Laodiceans to overcome their spiritual lethargy and complacency, to revive that spirit of fire and passion and zeal for God and His work. God has to correct the Laodiceans this way because they won't receive the correction that came in the form of Malachi's message, the written word or the spoken word. And so they have to go into the great tribulation for God to begin to get through to them. And this is true for physical Israel as well. Ezekiel 33, read verses 28 through 30 and see what's coming upon our land, our nations. Verse 19, it says, as many as I love, I rebuke and chasten. Be zealous, therefore, and repent. Be zealous. You see, that comes from the Greek word zeo, which means to boil. Be zealous. Catch fire for God and His work. Verse 19 says, as many as I love, I rebuke and chasten. Be zealous, therefore, and repent. It says, behold, I stand at the door and knock. If any man hear my voice and open the door, I will come in to him and will sup with him, and he with me. So if you answered the knock, and some of us did back in the early 1990s, you're allowing Christ to come in and dine with you. That's what we all want. Verse 21 says, to him that overcomes will I grant to sit with me in my throne, even as I also overcame and am set down with my Father in his throne. Now that's an exciting, miraculous turnaround to go from a lukewarm Laodicean state, we were all in it, and to see that zeal for God return, that fire in the belly, as Jeremiah wrote. The Key of David booklet, this is my father's little booklet, it says, look through the entire description of the Laodicean era, and you see nothing about the Key of David because the Laodiceans have lost it. They've lost that Key of David vision. They've lost the God family vision. That's why they're lukewarm or worse, it says. Mr. Armstrong undertook projects in Jerusalem and tried to get God's people excited about it for many years. If only they had latched on to that vision. They didn't latch on to it, though, because they became lukewarm spiritually. That, as I said earlier, Laodiceanism or lukewarmness spiritually, that's a sin. That's a sin that transgresses God's law. And God says, put it away. And of course, one way to really bring the zeal and the fire into your daily life as a Christian is through fervent prayer and diligent Berean-like Bible study. We'll get into this subject a little bit more on future programs. But for now, we're out of time, sadly. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is The Trumpet Daily. Don't forget the email address, td@thetrumpet.com. Thank you for joining us on today's show, and we'll see you tomorrow.